Hello, everybody, and welcome to the third class called All About Karma. We'll begin as we normally do by doing a short breathing meditation. We'll set the motivation, and then we'll take refuge and generate a mind of enlightenment together. So just sitting comfortably in your seat with your shoulders relaxed and your back straight. And breathing normally and naturally. Become aware of the movements that take place either at the abdomen or upper chest whenever you inhale or exhale. So doing this helps the body to relax and the mind to be present. If you find you become distracted, try to relax a little more. Keeping the mind in the body, you become aware of the movements that take place when you inhale or exhale. And then imagine that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas appear in the space in front of you and slightly above your eyebrows. And included within that field of awareness, all sentient beings who are sitting are surrounding you. And think how wonderful it is that we are still alive this morning. We still have this human life, which is very precious to us and very valuable. Because with this life, we can create the causes for happiness for ourselves and for others. Having a human life, and with it the potential to engage in a spiritual path, the most important thing to first do is to abandon the 10 non-virtues and engage in the 10 virtues. In other words, to engage and to observe karma and its effects. To do this skillfully, we need to rely upon the teacher, some teachings, and a spiritual community. So I think that the teachers here with us, Shakyamuni Buddha, the community is here, all the bodhisattvas, and the teachings are here, embodied by those teachers and community. I think that we're going to abandon the 10 non-virtues, engage in the 10 virtues, and using those as a foundation, then later engage in the perfections to bring about the welfare of all sentient beings. Now we'll take refuge in the field of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in front of us and above us. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I'm stabilizing and enhancing this wish for enlightenment. We will recite the Four Immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now, we sum up all the spiritual practices, religious stuff we have to abandon and other things we need to adopt. These are all summed up in the seven-limb prayer. So we could recite that. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cycle of existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. And finally, we make an offering to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in front of us, thinking that by doing so, we are letting go of the clinging to all the things that keep us within cyclic existence. In the absence of the clinging, think that as a wonderful ground appears, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamaya Tayami. So the mandala is released. It's accepted by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who smile at us with delight. In this field of merit begins to dissolve into light, melting to the central figure of Shakyamuni Buddha. An emanation leaves his heart, moves through space, and comes to abide above the crown of your head. Facing the same direction you are, so as to descend through space, entering the crown of your head, coming down to rest at the level of your heart. This emanation, a body of light, begins to expand, filling your body and mind. Light goes out further, going out through the pores of your skin, filling all of space. Wherever there are sentient beings within space, they are touched by that light and transformed, becoming fully awakened beings. And from your perspective, there is no inner, no outer, no self, no other. All phenomena are the same. And you're breathing and you're resting within the light. And something happens. It's a slight movement, and a recollection that you need to help others. And you need to become embodied again and to help all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. With that, all the light begins to withdraw and re-enters your body at the level of the heart. You feel yourself embodied, sitting where you are, breathing normally and naturally. I think I've got to observe karma and its effects and generate all the realizations necessary to become a Buddha, to bring benefit to all beings. And that's why I'm in this class, that's why I'm studying. And you're breathing deeply through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth, and in your own time, allow yourself to be back in your seat or in this room and feel at ease. As you know, karma literally means action, and it refers to sentient beings, intentional physical, verbal, and mental actions. Now, our actions depend upon our intentions. So actions done with virtuous intentions bring happy results. Actions done with non-virtuous intentions bring about unpleasant results. We've looked at, what karma is, its importance. That was focused around intention. We've looked at the substantial causes and contributory causes. And we spent a bit of time last week looking at these four principles of karma, and in particular the analogy of the seed and the medicinal tree. So in terms of the four principles of karma, they are that, you know, happiness always comes from virtue and never non-virtue. A small action can bring about large results in the same way that a tiny seed can grow into a large tree. The third principle is that if we don't create the cause, we won't experience the result. And the fourth principle is that these karmic seeds don't just get lost. And unless we impede them or destroy them in some way, the results will follow. So it's having some sort of faith in this that we sort of engage in the practice of abandoning the 10 non-virtues and adopting the 10 virtues. So these are the books I use for this class today. And so each week you'll see the book will slightly change.
Debbie had something to say about going through the book called Karma from last week. Yeah. And she said that her progress has slowed the more that she reads. And it's really good, but it's really dense, and she has to read a whole lot of passages two or three times.
Yeah. Yes, it's quite straightforward writing, but the meaning and the consequences are really quite deep, aren't they?
And then Anne says she's listening to it through an audio book, which is quite different. And she's found that she moves faster when she's listening with the audio instead of reading. Of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in this first one of the first books of her Practical Ethics and Profound Emptiness by Geshe Thakchok, that's a tremendous book on the 10 non-virtues and, you know, things like attachment and anger and so forth, and the antidotes, especially it's got depth, but he's so clear in his writing and quite straightforward. Buddhism, the foundation and so forth, this has got a lot of information all compacted, very straightforwardly put, quite easy to understand. And these last three books are all coming from the Lam Rim Chenmo, the Great Stages of the Path to Enlightenment. And in it, it's got a very quite broad and in-depth presentation of karma cause and its effects, and especially the material that I'll be presenting today. So today's outcomes. So first we're going to look at what karma and karmic paths. Right, so in other words, sort of intention and then the activities that contain the intention. So we've got intentions of karma and the activities you use, activities with our body or speech. They're the karmic paths, and of course we can also think these are also karmic paths. So we're going to look at the 10 non-virtuous karmic paths that are to be abandoned. And today we're sort of going to focus around the harmful paths of physical non-virtue, meaning killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. And in particular, we're going to focus on the last one, unwise and unkind sexual behavior. So sometimes you'll hear it called sexual misconduct. I particularly like this unwise and unkind. And this is a term brought forward by Venerable Thupten Chodron, the American nun. So you're probably aware that, you know, in terms of engaging in the path, you can start off as what they call the level of an initial practitioner or the beginning or the trainee in the small stages of the path. Then they've got training in the middle stages and finally training in the last stages. So initial level practitioners, their goal is to bring about a series of precious human lives in the future so their Dharma practice can continue without interruption. And so in other words, we're looking at our practice and going, you know, like for us, or at least for myself, so look, I don't think I'm going to get liberated by the end of this life. I don't think I'm going to attain Nirvana at the end of this life. But then I'm certain I'm not going to achieve enlightenment by the end of this human life. So what else do I want? If I can't get those two, what do I want? So a human life with the leisure and opportunity to engage in the path again. That's what I want. If I can't get the last first two, I definitely want the other one. In fact, Khinsa Rinpoche said, if you don't get that, you've basically wasted this life. Now, to get that, another chance of engaging in our path is to end up something like where we are today. Right? So it's like, how do you get that? Your job's abandon the 10 non-virtues, adopt the 10 virtues. That's got to be the foundation of it. Okay. So let's have a look now what these paths of action. I'll put the first one up. So these are, you know, we said before, virtuous white actions produce desirable effects of happiness. In other words, virtue brings about happiness. So what's virtue? Do anybody remember what the definition was from last week? What's virtue? Phenomena that produce, the main phenomena that produce happiness. And non-virtue is the main major phenomena that produce unhappiness and suffering.
Could you call it benefits as well? Not just happiness, but benefits?
Yeah, you can look at it, put it that way, it's okay, yeah. So what is virtuous then? So we talk about virtue, that's virtual. So what is virtuous? So it means abstinence from the destruction of life, from taking what is not given, from unwise sexual conduct, from false speech, from divisive speech, from harsh speech, from idle talk. Non-covetousness, goodwill and right views. So in other words, the 10 virtuous behaviors. And the absence or the restraining yourself from the 10 non-virtuous behaviors. Now, so what is non-virtuous? Well, the destruction of life, taking what is not given, unwise sexual conduct and so forth. So here we've got the 10 behaviours to adopt and the 10 to abandon. Now when we look at them as terms of the abandonment, the 10 non-virtues, so some of them are karmas, meaning actions, and some of them are karmic paths. Some of them are afflictions, and some of them are more than these. So we've got these four sort of possibilities here. So this we're going to have a look at first.
Are you going to explain what the difference between those?
Yeah. So we've got these 10 non-virtuous behaviors. That's the big picture. So saying some of them are karma, some of them are not karma, and some of them are karma and karmic paths, and some of them are not. So these I'll just let that go, just to sort of percolate there, and we'll just go on. These, like I said before, these non-virtuous black actions, they're just, often they talk about white actions and black actions. The idea is just that if it's black, it's unpleasant, unwanted, to be abandoned, non-virtuous.
Like the darkness of ignorance, kind of.
Yeah, and they use white for purity, good, that virtue, that to be adopted. So the self and sometimes it really takes the black actions, the white actions, some that are white and black, so forth. This is the way of explaining them. So here I'm describing these two. On the black side, he says, yeah, these are ignoble, harmful, non-dharma, polluted, blameworthy, leading to suffering. This is just some of the ways I describe the black side, the negative side, the non-dharma material. And on the other side, you have that which is noble, harmless. That which is dharma, unpolluted, blameless, and leading to happiness. And these are just two ways of describing these 10 actions, you know, 10 things to be abandoned and the 10 things to be adopted. So what's to be adopted is said to be noble, harmless, the Dharma, blameless, leading to happiness. 10 virtuous behaviors to adopt. On the other side, these behaviors seem to be ignoble, harmful, blameworthy, leading to suffering. So systemizing the most obvious among them, the Buddha said the paths of action, virtuous or non-virtuous, are 10. So here's the clues, the most obvious among them. So there's heaps of them. But it's just got, let's just, to begin with and start with, and the most important and useful for us, are these 10. So there are 10 to be seen as virtuous, 10 as non-virtuous, 10 that are harmless, 10 that are harmful, 10 that are blameworthy, 10 that are blameless. So when these 10 are done, so first, each of these 10 is made up of different parts. And this is something to always hold in mind. If you ever talk about anything, it'll have parts. So if we take the action of stealing, so we know, okay, that's the thing we're talking about. We're talking about stealing. The activity of stealing is made up of different parts. If we talk about wrong views, the wrong view is made up of parts. So every one of these 10 behaviors, whether they be virtuous or non-virtuous, black or white, they have parts. And there's different ways of describing these parts, different ways of categorizing them. So sometimes I'll use a category, three parts. You know, usually beginning, middle, and end. The basis, the action, the conclusion. This is one way of categorizing. But they've got others too. There's like 4, 5, 6. So you can be talking about one thing, but according to the amount of detail I wanted to go into, the parts expand. Yep, they're all three. Yeah, three parts to do with one thing. Yep. When all the parts are intact, it produces a full effect. When all the parts are not intact, you get something that's a little different. Now, when we take it like an action of killing, stealing, or sexual misconduct, right? So it's made up of these parts. They call these parts sometimes branches. But when they're all in place, they can lead to a future rebirth.
Is that why they're called paths?
Yeah, so it becomes a karmic path. It leads you to a result. So every act whenever these actions that have to be abandoned or adopted have all their parts intact, all their branches intact, they become karmic paths. Why? Because they're a pathway to a type of result in the future. So what do you think if we had a black action, like killing, stealing, something like that, right? And all the parts are intact. It becomes a karmic path. What? Where do you think it's going to lead to? Yeah, a black result. A miserable.
Somewhere worse.
Somewhere worse, that's right.
Miserable realms.
Black leads to black. White leads to white.
Which sounds obvious, but in practice, it's not really what we do, because it's a there's a time lag in there.
Yeah. So this is one reason why they're called a karmic path. Second reason is they're called karmic paths because they're either the cause of an intention or the path that intention travels to perform the action. Right, so just let you know that there's two types of why this is called a karmic path, right? So the seven non-virtues of body and speech are karmic paths.
Because is this so that to remember that we don't like get led up the garden path?
Yeah, well, simply
where's the path lead?
Yeah, well, that's what you got to remember. Like when you do an activity, there's a consequence that leads you. This activity is going to lead you to somewhere. So the first seven of these 10 things to abandon or to adopt are karmic paths, and they are also karma. They are also actions, aren't they? They have these actions, and they can lead you to somewhere. So this is this intention that goes along, action and intention, they're together. So there's something to think about, to remember. You know, it's not hard, this one. Body actions of the body and speech, the first seven, are both karma and karmic path. Then we come to the mind, and the mind stuff are all karmic paths. So you can say, okay, all 10 then are all karmic paths. Yeah, yep, that's right, no problem there. All 10 of these are karmic paths. But the last ones of the mind, envy, malice, and wrong views, or covetousness, malice, and wrong views, these are not karma. They're afflictions. And afflictions and karma are two different things. So here's a type of table that might help us. So the mental factor of intention is karma. Now, this is what I said before, so, you know, Buddha taught the karma wasn't just action, it was really about this intention, the driving thing of action. So it is a karma, intention is a karma.
So it's accidental actions, like tripping over and you know, knocking somebody or killing an insect, that's not an intention, so that wouldn't. Does it preclude accidents?
Yeah, that's a different topic. Yeah. So there's things that take place, but then there's the intentions, it's like not there.
Yeah.
Okay. So the mental factor of intention is a karma. It's not a karmic path, and it's not an affliction. Seven physical and verbal non-virtues are all karma. They are karmic paths, as we said before. They're not afflictions, they're karmas. The three mental non-virtues are not karma. Why? Because they're afflictions. They are karmic paths, though. And they are afflictions.
Is that because an affliction necessarily disturbs the mind? Necessarily?
It's what I call, there's no way that an affliction can be a karma. They're put off like that. They're separate. They're two different categories. So I think that's probably the simplest way to think of it. So you go, okay, if it's karma, it's not affliction. It's affliction, it's not karma.
Because the mental non-virtues don't necessarily involve interacting with another being. They happen. They could just happen in our mind, whereas the others are affecting others.
I'm sorry, I just can't not quite get what you mean here.
The three mental non-virtues can just happen in our mind, no one even knows, and isn't
that's
karma
right. Yeah.
Affecting others. It's like an interaction. You harm others or you help others. So the speech and the body, physical ones, actually affect others, whereas the mental ones no one even knows.
Perhaps. So what can we take? One of the simplest ways of thinking about this is that all 10 are karmic paths. Now, that's what they all have in common, aren't they? They're all karmic paths.
So Debbie's asking, so why do we need to know the difference between these three? Karma, karmic path, and affliction.
Because if you don't, then you start making mistakes later on, thinking one thing is a karma when it's actually an affliction it could be a karma. Because then later on, and with this, then you have karmic seeds and you have seeds of the afflictions. That was after when you do your actions. And people can, it's really easy to get activities confused with actually afflictions, karmic actions, thinking that this is, and then thinking that an affliction is actually a karma. So afflictions lead to karma. And this is a really important thing. So the afflictions are the creators of the karma, but they're not karma, they're created.
Okay, so that was Helene's question. Can you define the affliction? So, yeah, and something that creates.
Yeah. Okay. So of the two, what do you think is more important then, the karmas or the afflictions? The afflictions. That's right. You get rid of the karma and it's like, yeah, but you can always produce some more of it because you've got the afflictions. And these are... Once again, in summary, the simplest way is like this. So there are these 10 non-virtues, the physical actions, and they are karma and karmic paths. Like we said before, look, we know that they're all going to be karmic paths. That's simple, nice one. We go, okay, that's great, I got it. Everyone's a karmic path. So we can see here the body and speech are also actions.
So karma meaning action.
Yeah. But the mental ones are afflictions.
So it's better to think of them as afflictions rather than mental activity or mental actions.
They are mental activity, but they're in particular afflictions.
Afflictions, okay.
So the 6 non-virtues, like you put in, we directly harm others. So although idle talk does not directly harm others, it provokes people to act in ways that do. And the harmful effects of the 10 non-virtues are evident even to animals. If someone takes away an animal's food, an act that resembles stealing, the animal becomes miserable. You'll see our cats. cry. If you shout at the animal becomes unhappy. Once someone begins to covet the possessions of others, even his or her close friends become wary and keep a distance. There's someone who uses their sexuality unwisely or unkindly loses the trust of others. Now, this is the experience of sentient beings in general. It doesn't matter if they are religious practitioners or not. But to stop engaging in the non-virtuous actions that no one likes, you have to counteract the afflictions that motivate them. And to actually put an end. No, not directly. Not directly. That comes a bit later in the presentation. Yeah. So he says, to overcome, so we've got karma and affliction, right, amongst these 10. You want to stop the karmas, you've got to stop the afflictions. It's hard. Right? So you don't start there, you start with the karma.
Because
it's
the most obvious.
It's easy. Just restrain yourself to stop yourself from killing, stop yourself from stealing. Huh? Just find out all the terrible things that it produces. You go, okay, I'm not going to do it. So you stop the activity, but the causes are still there. Miffy.
Jeanette has a question that she's thinking, so intention is a mental factor, so yeah. How is it not a karmic path? You know how you're saying, you know, that karma is an intended action?
Yep.
So how is that intention not a karmic path? You know, back to that chart with the...
Yeah, that chart, yep. So I'm wondering if I actually... intention's a mental factor. I can't answer that question at the moment. Yeah. I have to think about it. And it might even be that I'll put this chart up wrong me. I'm going to check. might be intention is a karmic path.
No, because isn't that the difference between intended actions and
intention?
Yeah, and intention.
So right. In the previous class, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Intended action and intention.
So here it's not about intended actions, it's about actually an intention to act. If we don't have any intention, there's no, it's not a full karma.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Anyway, so there's this section, so they asked this question, and that's why I've got to put this material in. What's the difference between a karmic path, karma and affliction? You know, what is the karmic path? What's the karma? Yeah, the karma is often produced with the help of affliction, right? The affliction drives the action. Yeah, so an activity is carried out. Then the activity finishes and it leaves a potential for something of a similar type, nature to happen, and some sort of something similar. And there's three different similarities which we'll come to. So this is in this class, I think it's only just in this class that I'm doing this thing of karma and karmic path. There's only one question on it. There's other material about it where you can sort of go through it, especially the Lam and Chenma, and have a look and try and work out what the heck's, how I get my head around this.
Just looking at it like this, though, it's quite nice. Easy. It makes sense because I found it very hard to get my head around the mental actions, how they're an action, but actually think of them as the karmic paths and afflictions makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The other book, as it says, Geshe Tenchong's book. This is where these tables came from. So let's have a look now just at these actions.
Sorry, I've got a question.
Is it karma? Action.
Karma and action
are the same. So karma and action are the same thing, right? An action.
You're creating karma. And you're creating, going on the karmic path, or you're creating afflictions through these things on the left.
No, the things on the left are just saying what they are.
But if you do them, is that what you mean?
Yeah, so if you do, like, so if you engage, say, in killing, right, which is one of the physical actions, right? So that's a karma. It's an activity. You kill, it's an action of killing, right? Is it also a karmic path? Yes, because it leads you to a terrible consequence.
Right? Sorry, I was looking at it from a different
point of view. Yeah, it's okay. Later, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just when I look back, I'm like, that doesn't make
sense. Well, that's all right. Yeah, that's good. So when it doesn't, exactly, yeah. Try and clarify it. That's right. Thank you. So let's begin to have a look at some of these actions. We're going to look at the physical ones in brief and then do one of them in depth. So we have killing. Now, is killing a karma?
Yeah.
Is it a karmic path?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So killing is a karma and a karmic path. And each action has weight and strength. So these are some other parts of it. So we'll introduce these to you now. And of the and these weights, like, you know, we can call them heavy karma. So killing is the heaviest of the non-virtuous physical paths. Killing is the weightiest or heaviest of the non-virtuous physical paths. So what are the three non-virtuous physical paths? Can you have a guess at it? Oh, sorry, weightiest of the non-virtuous. Yep, that's right. Weightiest of the non-virtuous physical paths. What
so
are the three physical paths?
You're asking, what are the three worst physical actions?
Yes, that are in these 10.
The killing,
killing's one. Yeah, killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. So if killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct, it's saying, what's the heaviest one there? It's saying killing is. And killing can be motivated by either of these three afflictions. Desire, hatred, or ignorance. And finally, it's always completed with hatred.
Right, so if you didn't have hatred, it would be completed karmic action?
Yeah, that's right.
Or it's completed...
Now, if you kill, it's completed with hatred.
Oh.
It's completed with malice, a wish to destroy,
a wish to destroy.
Finish a life.
Every time.
So it can be driven by something else, like ignorance.
Like if you didn't have the intention.
Well, it's not, and you can still take the life. You can still take the life, isn't it?
Yeah, like you didn't mean to. You just
didn't. So what's it driven by then?
Ignorance.
Yeah. So you say it's ignorance.
They're not completed with hatred.
No.
Okay.
No, it's good. The action itself will be finished up with hatred.
Yes.
Because the other person dies.
So
it's
you
still
concluded.
So you've got two different parts of an action, right? So you've got the action, what's driving you before, it's ignorance.
Yeah.
Or you could even, in this case, it could even be that, just to preserve my life.
How you ended up killing. There's still an intention there, though, Alison. If you're self-protection, there's still an intention to harm other. You're not trying to save the other.
No.
Whereas, isn't intention, say, for instance, if you have a car accident, it's an accident and somebody dies. It's not an intended action. You didn't intend to kill that person.
Mm. But this is, yeah, so this is what you're talking about here is a different, another, what can you say? Subtlety,
yeah.
Of the teaching. And so then later on there's a whole section about this, right? But here it's just like, this is what we're doing here, just going through the real simple presentation first, and then as you say, as you hear it, then you get all these questions, don't we?
Yeah.
So in the presentations of karma, they sort of look at all of that. Unfortunately, we won't be doing a lot of that in this class, because it's like, this is a huge subject. Like karma, so When you look at the books on it, you get one big complete book that covers a lot of the material in it, and yet it's not all there either. And so here what I've tried to do is just present the material that our organisation wants you guys to all sort of know, at least have that, and then you'll know. There's a whole lot of stuff I don't know. I go, yep, we haven't talked about it. There's material here and you can have a look at it.
But that's something I can search out later.
Yeah, well, of course, yeah, because you want to know about that, you know.
And we can just continuously rejoice that we're not in America where there's like hundreds of thousands of guns because literally we're dodging bullets by just not having the ability to...
We sure are.
...to stuff up.
Well, you can't use one if you don't have one.
No, that's right. Now, like I said before, so every action is made up of parts. So killing, so each of these actions, first of all, we introduce it to you simply the four simple parts. There's always a basis for the action. There's an attitude taken. There's an action. And then the action is completed. That's one way of looking, and that's the way we're going to look at it. There are other ways too. So in terms of stealing, is it a karma? Is stealing a karma? Yes, it is. Is it a karmic path? Yes, it is. Good. Now, it's the less weighty. It's not as heavy as killing. That's right, good. So it's not as heavy as killing. It also can be motivated by desire, hatred, or ignorance. So when I put this up, this is where you can sort of kind of sit there and think, okay, so if I were to steal something out of hatred for anyone, could that be done? I really don't like them, so I'm going to steal the stuff. Yep, you go, yep, I could do that. How about desire for what they've got, attachment? Could I steal something from them out of attachment? Yep, I could. How about ignorance? Could I take something from somebody without actually knowing that I was actually stealing from them?
Yeah, like we're in Australia.
Yeah, that's right.
Not ours.
Yeah. So okay, guys, that's what you sort of, I'd like you to sort of do. To say you've got to sort of slow it down. Otherwise, it just becomes intellectual knowledge and you forget because it doesn't actually, you haven't related to yourself. So that's why I'm trying to sort of slow it down on this stuff. But it's always completed with desire. Yeah, that could also be in it, but it's always like, so the things you guys are getting stuck on is the completion of it. So yes, you could take it with not knowing the consequences of it, not knowing that it belonged to somebody else. So so really helps when you look at the definition of stealing. So what is that? Taking what's not been freely offered. So you walk in, you go, oh, should I need a pen? Oh, there's one. Sue's done here, I'll just take the pen. Well, that's stealing. But you can be ignorant of that. Not know. Gee, that's stealing.
That's not ignorance of not being an
I and all that. No, this is just, yeah. Yeah. So you can just take something and think, oh, yeah, I'll take, you know, and maybe you could forget that you've got it. So you took something out of really not knowing that stealing is determined by you taking something that's not been freely given by somebody. Yeah, I think we all have. Then we come to unwise and unkind sexual behaviour. Is it a karma?
Pens and teaspoons.
Is it a karma? Is it a karmic path? Yeah. It's the lightest of the physical non-virtues. And so it's lighter than stealing and it's lighter than killing. And stealing and killing are heavier than unwise sexual behavior, and unkind sexual behavior. It also can be motivated by desire, hatred, or ignorance. But it's always completed with desire. Now we're going to look at this in more depth. very shortly. But I'll just show you some of these, how you can do it. So the first way is like, you just use these three categories. You can look at the intention that's driving the behavior. Then you look at the activity itself. And then you look at how it's completed. So what's not obvious to you is like when we go and say like later on and say, look, this is another way of doing it. We've got four. We can look at the basis, what's called the attitude, the performance, and culmination. Or we could look at it like this. Basis, perception, attitude, affliction, conclusion. And there's even another way of putting all six different parts in there. And this really depends upon who's teaching it in the text that you're using.
And how deep into the psychology you want to get, or whether you just want to figure out how to stop the negative karmic paths.
So sometimes you'll have a teacher just use the first three, and you go, just get your head around this. Whatever drives the action, which in the middle, it's always an intention. So there's your karma, and then the action is going to be the karmic path, and it's going to lead to a conclusion. Some sort of result is going to take place. Then you can go down to the bottom, and then you can look at, you know, four, five, six. But whatever they are, they can all be squeezed into that three. The five can be pushed into four, the six can be put into the five. You can find ways of doing it. So the Dalai Lama says about this, it's important to appreciate that since there are different stages to every act, karmic actions are themselves composite, meaning that they're made up of parts. And the quality of the activity can be characterized as the cumulative result of each of their composing factors. I mean, you've got to put all the parts together and you go, wow, okay, here's the result. So that's useful to remember, like when you want good results, you want to have all the parts together. You don't want to, if you want to wish to not have the bad result of your action, then have lots of parts missing. Right? Or that'll either won't come out or you weaken it immeasurably. Well, we have to go, I just say, So this week, what we're going to do, I'm going to just show you, is all these different stages of the actions. Right? So we just settle there. And then next week, we'll do the same, but with a different type of action. But I'm going to bring it all together to show you, like, oh, it's like this. And then you can see, oh my God, if these get changed, the results will change.
As we change the components,
as the parts of the activity are changed, stronger, weaker, missed out, part of the action doesn't go along right with the intention, then the results all change and they're different.
And so like with Robin Hood, you know, of stealing from the rich to give to the poor, there's actually two actions in there. One's the stealing and then the one's the giving.
Yeah,
but,
that's right.
But the components within those actions would change depending. You know, if he changed his mind halfway through and decided to keep the stuff, that would change it too.
Yeah, so, you know, if you look at it, actually there's two actions there. You could say one is the taking, the stealing, and the other is the act of generosity, the giving. Now, they don't sort of nullify them, but this will also, it does have an effect, though.
Yeah. So you would
like to get to it. Yeah, so, well, I'll give you an example. So one, a thing like this. But so the thing is you need to look at the motivation for doing what you're about to do. So you go, okay, so I am going to take what's not been freely given. That's called stealing. Right? And I'm going to do this to give it away to people who actually need it. Yeah, yep, that's right. So what might the consequences for that be? And so we said, well, actually, there's two sort of actions going on here. And it really is determined, the consequence is really like, why are you taking the food? So here's the story, right? So Bodhisattva comes along and sees the place all locked up. It's got a lot of food in there, and there's all these people outside starving. So he goes, okay, I take that food. I am going to do a negative action. This is stealing. This is, yes, that's true. He says, and there is a karma consequence for that, and I am prepared to take that consequence. So now I'm going to actually go and then break in there, take the food and distribute it to others. So there's still a consequence there, but the motivation is very different from taking it for me. You know?
Also, in the one of the Nyunge commentaries, it said about people who are very generous, but also quite angry or belligerent. So the mixture of that, then the karmic result is that you end up with lots of wealth, but a really utterly terrifying form and no friends. So, yeah, it's a mixed bag. There's a mixed result rather than nullifying it.
Yeah, because the action's been mixed. The paths of the actions are mixed up. So let's. So I picked unwise and unkind sexual behaviours. I thought, you know, for most ordinary people, we're not going to be out killing people, and we probably will stop stealing. But desires always is, we're in the realm of desire. It's the last, most difficult one to go.
And just look at all the TV shows.
Yeah, that's right. There's so much emphasis put on sex and relationships, aren't there? Well, okay, let's do this one. Oftentimes it's a little bit can become uncomfortable and embarrassing, but hey, we're humans, we're all in. Let's have a look. So here are the four stages. First is called the basis. And in this behavior of unwise, unkind sexual behavior, the basis will be a person who you shouldn't be having sex with. That's one, the basis. The other is could be the part of the person you're having sex with. That's also engaged. The time that you're doing it and the place that you're doing it. So these are all come under the basis. And now I'll bring in also this idea of weight and strength. So there's a big difference if you're having sex at home with somebody you shouldn't be, than having sex in the gompa with somebody you shouldn't be. Or having sex in the room next door to your teacher. So that shows you the difference, like the place has a role in the heaviness or the lightness of this action. So the time. So for instance, what if we have the vows have just been given? And we've just taken the vows and now we forget and we engage anyway. So it's different when you have the vows and when you don't have them. It could be different in terms of we say, today's a holy day, but tomorrow's not. Can we just wait till tomorrow? No, today.
So
it
could be any kind of vows. It could be just different from just before you were married to just after you were married.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
Same person, but a whole different.
Yeah, so these things that you can see, that, and then the part of the person, and the person. So this is all contained with this thing just called the basis, the first part of the action. So Mila's going to look and go, yeah, it gets bigger and bigger. The second thing is the attitude. And in the attitude, you've got three parts: the perception, the motivation, and the affliction. So the perception goes, like, I really like metta. So I make sure I'm after metta and I don't mistake Sue for metta. Oh, it was dark, sorry. I thought you were someone else. So the perception's got to be correct. If you it's the wrong person, the karma's not as heavy. That's what I'm sort of saying there. It's still wrong, but it's not as heavy because you didn't get the person you actually meant to be doing it with. Now the motivation is to actually engage in this act you should not be engaging in. And the affliction could be any of the afflictions, any of the three poisons. And this this is really important. As like I said before, makes it really heavy, lighter. So we've got this attitude. So you can already see there's a lot just in the first half, right? And it is the strength brought to the motivation, isn't there? The strength of the affliction, the weight of the affliction. Then there's the performance. So someone said, you know, it's once these two organs meet, it's like it's done. But how has it culminated? So it must be pleasure. So I've read of stories where nuns have been raped. And then the nun said, I've experienced no pleasure whatsoever. And he's going, well, so there's no...
The person who's raping experiences no pleasure?
No, the person who got raped.
Yeah.
Right? But sometimes you can think, oh, so I've broken, you know, like I've this terrible karma here. And you go, well, no, pleasure's not... there's no pleasure experienced here. So this is what I was saying before about how we often make mistakes of what karma and an affliction is, and whether karmas are complete or not. So you'll find oftentimes the negative ones are nearly always complete. They're done easy. The positive ones, they've often got parts missing. So our virtue becomes weak and our non-virtue strong.
In looking at these four stages, that this is the reasoning behind, for instance, why in rape, you haven't broken your vow of sexual misconduct if you are raped, because you're there, there's the meeting of the organs,
that's
the performance,
right.
But there's no culmination because you
right.
didn't have any pleasure.
Right.
So you haven't broken, if you've been raped, you haven't broken your vow from
no.
that side.
No, that's right. They need to feel guilty or bad about it. That's
the person
right.
raping has.
That's right. They definitely
yeah.
have. Yeah, so we look at it from if you look at from what you often do, so we ask for examples now, it's like, you know, there's always two. It's like you've got to looking from the point of view of myself and then what I know about the other person who's acted.
So also with the attitude, for instance, over time, just a decade or so ago, it was perfectly fine to coerce sexual relations in marriage.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, it's... at least not enshrined in law anymore, that it's okay. So is that to do perception, motivation, affliction, that kind of changes over time? You know, like if you were a bloke 50 years ago, you wouldn't even know you were doing anything wrong.
Right, so that's right. So if you're looking at it from this point of view, you'd look at that as being unkind sexual behaviour. Because the basis is not met because she is your wife. So the person's not an improper person. But then if you could look at the problems, well, what about the time, the place? So all the others are there, attitude, the performance, the culmination are there. But she is your wife. So it's not a complete action.
Should have done a trigger warning before this, Eddie.
Yeah, this is the one that's got so much information when you're in the when you read the text, because so many, like Westerners in particular, aren't aware of, for instance, the orifice, time and place.
Well, kind of. I mean, the place, people kind of know it's, you don't have sex in a church.
Oops.
Don't they?
Church doors, that all right?
No, but yes, there's lots of movies, right?
That's right. It's meant to be an improper place, isn't it? Anyway, if you go to the lamb room, there it's big. And I think it's very simple for your ordained. It's just like, no. if you're not ordained and a lay person, there's, oh my gosh, there's a lot of material here to consider. So in every action I've used here, I've used this outline here, basis, attitude, performance, and culmination. And I'd suggest it's a good one to get your head around. Now, with the one with three, there's just a heap in those first two. But this is sort of a bit more spacious.
We don't have time.
Yeah, we won't, but... So now we're going to have a look at the weight and strength. So remember this attitude? So how intense hostility, intense desire, or intense indifference? The performance, if it's done with glee, with a lot of preparation, if you do it, if it's a habit of yours, do it repeatedly for long lengths of time. No shame, no embarrassment, no confession, no remorse. And you're dealing with these distorted ideas supported by the wrong views. And then we come to the basis again, the improper person, the orifice, time, or place. So, like I said, like next week, I'll draw the four parts together with the weight and strength. I didn't want to do it with this one because it's just overload you guys with so much information, but it just introduced to you the concepts and the ideas here. And show how things have parts. And if the parts are weakened or strengthened in any way or missed out, it has an influence on the result. The thing I'd like for you to take away is in that previous slide of when there's an activity and the basis, the attitude, the performance, and the culmination are all in place, becomes a karmic path. It's going to lead you to some type of result. Unless, like later on, you realize, oh my God, that's a complete karmic path, that I could get that result. I don't want it. I'm going to start doing some practices now to stop it. That's possible.
So, I mean, with these the weight, a lot of these are recognised in our law. I mean, it's quite it makes sense with these. It's like common sense. All of the differences in attitude or whether there's remorse or not.
Yeah, that's right.
If it's compounded with wrong views.
Yep. That's right. So often I can say, so it's recognised in law. So if you're, you know, and you'll see, like if you're in a, as it's often happens, in accusations of rape and so forth, and they go up in trial, all this is brought out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it determines what type of sentence is going to be given. And it's the same type of thing, you know, we sentence ourselves with our unwise and unkind behaviour. We get the result. The next one, let's have a look at this. The strength, they often call it the strength and power. So the recipient, once again, you can see is an improper partner, someone in your own family, a child, the ordained, a person holding vows, the orifice is wrong, the time is done, it's wrong, and the place. So it's all under this heading called recipient. But you can see, isn't it, that goes back to the other one of the basis and the basis in the others. Basis in terms of the weight and basis in terms of the actual action itself.
So one's coming weight and then this is this
the strength of the action.
Okay.
Yeah. The object itself is unwise and unkind sexual activity or behaviour. And here the strength is either increased or decreased depends upon how you are supported yourself by your knowledge and ethics.
So if you come from a really macho culture, for instance, and there isn't any education, it's less weighty than if you have all of this education and then, or you have Dharma education and you disregard it.
Yeah, that'd be an instance of it. Yep, you could use that. Yeah.
Because
that's an example of it.
I mean, even in our law now, there's something about that, especially for cases from many years ago, that go, well, at the times were different then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, this is this attitude. The attitude you take. So you notice that the other ones of the weight and the activity itself, you've got, you know, the attitudes there, the objects there, the recipients there. So what I've done in the next week, when you look at you know you take this and you try and put it all together. So whenever I engage in an act, there's going to be some sort of strength, there's going to be some sort of weight. Yeah, see this recipient involved. Another term is called the basis. So you can see where these all fit together and this attitude. Where you go, okay, in the attitude, yeah, there was attitude in the weight, there was attitude in the activity itself, and I broke it down to the four parts. Right, so the attitude, in other words, could have, How long do I keep this idea in my mind? The strength of the attitude. Not only just the length of the time you keep it in your mind, but the intensity of it. So you'll find this, and just take across to any type of thought that you have. It's like, how long do you keep it there? What type of thought is it? And so this, as you can see, I can see you nodding and agreeing. It's like, yeah, so this leads to these karmic consequences, more heavier karmas, more lighter karmas, meaning more heavier experiences, lighter experiences. And these experiences, are called results. We've got these three different types of results. You have a ripening result. The ripening result is the rebirth you find yourself in. So you look at this, we go, okay, so the action had all the parts. The action was actually completed. Nothing stopped it ripening, so it ripened. It's called a ripening result. If it's a negative behavior, you find yourself in the lower realms. If it's a positive behavior, you find yourself in the upper realms.
So in terms of karmic paths, is that like you get to the destination of the karmic path?
Yeah, that action, which is the karmic and the karmic path, it leads you to the result. If the karma was a black karma or a negative, it leads you to a result that is black and negative, which is lower realm rebirth. If nothing stops it, you get lower realm rebirth. If it's positive, it leads to an upper realm rebirth. That upper realm rebirth, lower realm rebirth, they're called the ripening result. This cause, what I did, caused me to take this result. That result's called the ripening result. So we can look at ourselves here and say, the ripening result for us is?
Awesome.
Rebirth as a human being in the upper realms, where we actually have the desire to engage once again in the spiritual path. And we have the freedom to do it. It's a fantastic result. Whereas you look at like our cats, so now they're in the lower realms. So that was a negative result. However, it wasn't that heavy because, man, there's worse than that. So the ripening result is just the rebirth you find yourself in. I'll use this way of presenting it. Every week we come, so you guys can gradually get a go, okay, that's what the ripening result is. This is how, you know, sort of, so you get a general sort of idea of it and becomes more familiar to you. There's a couple of other results, but it's just called a causally concordant result. But there's two types of causally concordant results, though. One is in experience and one is in behavior. So what this is getting at, suppose you don't, in terms of the ripening result, you do not find yourself in the lower realms, right? You find yourself in the higher realms, as we are, human being. But the results are concordant with the experience of the past behavior. So it's for killing, right? So we take a life in killing. We get a good result as we're here, but we get the experiential result while we are as human beings. What would that be?
Being killed,
having a short life.
Would it be also like living somewhere where there's always the threat of being killed?
And no, that's the next type of result. It's called the environmental result. So here, this is just experience and behavior. So the other thing is we might find ourselves as humans, and we like hurting people. Lastly, we get the environmental result. That's it. So suddenly we find ourselves living in places where it's really difficult. Land might be really difficult. Our neighbours might be really difficult.
Might live in a place with lots of landmines everywhere, or where there's civil war.
Yeah. Not bad, eh? So here we have these, so like I said, the fruition. If the activity is a small animal, hungry ghost, great. So this is really talking about the strength, the completion of the action, the strength and the weight. So then you get results concordant with it. Yeah. So it's like really heavy, really strong, all four parts in place, rebirth in the house. Not as heavy, not as strong. Rebirth as a hungry ghost. Even less strength, less weight. Rebirth as an animal. The fruition result is always there. The action was completed. Right? But less strength, less weight. When I looked at this, I thought, man, be really careful. Look about how many different living beings we see as animals, for instance, suffering, you know, like immense and so different, eh? We wouldn't want to eat them like that. And if you read about the lower realms and the spirit realms, you won't want to be there either. Causally concordant results corresponding to experiences. So in terms of the sexual unwise and unkind sexual behavior, you find yourself having a lot of problems with your partner. A lot of arguments, a lot of breakups.
So if we can extrapolate back and go, okay, my whole life has been a string of failed romances.
Yeah, that's right. You go, that's because of past, yeah, that's right, past behavior. Yep. And then in terms of the result corresponds to behavior, well, you keep on behaving like that. You probably all know people, at least we do, a couple of people, that just like that, go from experience to experience to experience, from romance to romance to romance, or what do you call it? Relationship to relationship to relationship. And leaving people hurt each time they do it. It's like, no problem.
So a result corresponding to the behaviour would be, say, always being attracted to married men.
Yeah, and then and you have to sort of do something. It's not just the attracted. It's like you've got to act, like acting on it, right? Behaving that's similar to it, not just the attraction. But like you say, so suppose you were like that and your partner knew that this was the case, you're always looking at other people, commenting, blah, 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 then trouble in the relationship, isn't there? So you get them this experience.
So
The environmental result, so it manifests as your external environment, the possessions you have and how you relate to them. So in unwise and unkind sexual behavior, you know, you end up living in a, what they say, a very dirty place with very poor sanitation, bad smells, foul odors, and basically being miserable. This is like the summary. Possessed of my own deeds, I am the inheritor of deeds, kin to deeds, one who has deeds as a refuge. Whatever deeds I shall do, whether good or evil, I shall become the heir of it. He says, you know, the Buddha has this vast knowledge and understanding of the functioning of karmic cause and effect, while we, as limited beings, don't have the capacity to actually say this and that, this causes that. We need to be able to specifically work out the exact interplay of karmic causes and their conditions. What this can do is give you like a general understanding of it, and by doing so, moderate your behavior.
So in a way, anywhere our own inheritance.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So Jeanette's going, and that's why I practice confession to the 35 Buddhas.
Very good, Jeanette. As well, we should all do that.
So that's like, instead of taking the negative deeds as our refuge, it's actually taking a refuge that can help us.
Yeah, that's right. If you know that the negative deeds actually produce more suffering, and any suffering you've actually experienced has actually come from negative deeds that you produced at some other time, and you don't like to feel unhappy, you don't like all these unpleasant experiences, yeah, we have to take refuge in something else. We go, that don't work. And like I said, you know, we began the class by saying the idea is to acknowledge this don't work. I'm not going to do it. What will work?
Eddie, so many times in relationship difficulties where if you find out your partner's been cheating on you, then people go and have revenge sex. And it's kind of like an established thing in our culture that there are countless movies and TV shows about this.
Yeah.
Reinforcing it as a normal behavior.
And just propagate your own suffering, just make it worse for yourself. As most people will know, and if you follow along with it, it doesn't actually bring about a better sort of life for yourself. You know, you might get a very short, brief span of, ha, gotcha. But then once you know about this, you go, yeah, how unfortunate for you. You've just created a perfect storm for yourself.
So Deb is saying, I think what's very difficult when we think that we don't do heavy karmas, it's easy to become complacent and think that it's not so bad, except that karma can grow and lead to habitual behaviour that then creates more like action.
Yeah, so there's a good point to bring up, Debbie. So you need to remember that karma can grow, but also remember that if I asked you, what were you doing 7 years ago on Sunday? You'd all go, I don't know, but you were doing something. And it might have been something really unskillful. So you just take it back, like you go back a week ago and ask, what was I doing on Sunday at 3 o'clock? You go like, oh, I've forgotten. Well, that's like past lives, right? The smart and safest way to go is like, I could have done it all. And if you just look at it in history, you'll find good people have done some absolutely terrible things. And in terrible people who've done terrible things have actually turned their lives around and become much better people. So I always go, never think that you are as good as you think you are. But all that has to happen is the conditions change and you could be a monster. And there's lots of stories in history that support that. And as long as we're unenlightened, I think the safest thing is to think, I've done it all. I just forgot. And I better clean my act up.
Right. So Samsara has very much been there, done that. Over and over.
Yeah, that's right. Over and over and over. And isn't, we've never been satisfied. We're still doing it.
There is a question here from Tane about the karmic events for the Tibetans and the monks suffering for, you know, the last 50 years or so.
Yeah.
Could there be such a thing as this last karmic experience that will free you?
Okay, so what you can do with that,
Tane,
that's a skillful way of looking at your own suffering. Right? You can say, so yes, so this effect is one effect that can't take place again. It's over, this one effect. And thank goodness it took place like this, because I can deal with it. It's good. So it's like saying any type of suffering you experience now, sort of like rejoice in it. It's like, great, this is the effect of past bad behaviours or whatever. It's come to fruition like this. And so it should. It's natural.
So that's suffering for ourselves.
Produces suffering for ourselves.
Yeah.
That's right. And then we are, and it's like, it is an unpleasant feeling, but I'm glad it's over. And I'm not going to create some more stuff just because I don't feel good about it. Don't do that. Yeah, so then we could rejoice in that. But please don't say to somebody else, they have no background in Buddhism. Oh, it's really good, you're suffering. It's all over.
Yeah, you can't just say, that's your karma.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's your karma, those sort of things. That's right, people are not.
I've heard Buddhists say that
too. Careless Buddhists will say it, or they don't know enough, or they're just new to it and they're gung-ho. Yeah. So it's like, you know, our future depends on the actions we take now. And we looked at something about, you know, karma and karmic paths. We sort of looked at, in general, this overview that there are 10. We focused on the three of the physical. The major one was sexual, unwise and unkind sexual behaviours. We found that this ad-act has got four major parts. There's a basis, the attitude, the performance, and the act culminates, finishes. And even in there, we have things like the strength of the act, the weight of the act. And of those three behavior, non-virtuous physical behaviors, the heaviest of them all was killing. That's right. Less heavy, stealing. And the lightest is sexual misconduct within the physical non-virtuous behaviours. So here's the readings, page 65, 67, and page 74, 92, and that is from the FPMT notes. The LTC notes are 7 to 9, 18 to 36. And you'll see those up in the members area.
Yep, or in the resources.
You've got the notes package. Yep. So next week, it's a bit the same, but this time we'll go over the non-virtuous karmic paths of speech. You know, there are four. We're going to take the one on rough speech, because this is one I am very familiar with. It's very easy to swear and use harsh speech, you know. Well, we all sort of do that, me in particular, so I chose that one. So it's not the heaviest, because lying is the heaviest one. That's the weightiest. And I also put out once again that that whatever the action is, it's always got those, you know, three, four, five, six parts. I'm explaining in terms of four parts: basis, attitude, performance, culmination. It'll always have weight and strength involved with it. And I hope to see you all there. This has been something useful for you. So through the merit of us engaging in this class, listening to it, talking about it, thinking about it, and may all of our teachers, all students of the Dharma, the benefactors of Dharma, visitors to Dharma centres, and in fact all sentient beings, may they have all the causes of happiness and the results of our merit. May they all be free from suffering, and may all their sufferings, indifference, self-cherishing, ego-grasping, ripen upon our indifference to their suffering. So never separated from the happiness free of suffering, where every being abide in equanimity, the quality of all things. And where we recollect that all this exists in mere name.